We live in a era and a culture right now which is bedeviled by distraction. And even if we don't ourselves, a little bit higher, have ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, we all move from topic to topic. We all have five things going at the same time. We all feel pressured by our jobs to be doing this, doing that, catching up with things. Almost all of us live with a pressure to do, to do, to do. And even if we're not doing a lot, and even if we appear to be lazy, most people who are sort of taking that route will tell you, well, I'm a no good, I'm not doing anything, I'm not doing, I'm not doing, I'm not doing. So distraction is a very, very big, and the pressure to do is a way in which we're not generous with ourselves. And finally, well, let me say, what is generosity with ourselves? It's really allowing us to know what our thoughts, our feelings, and our experience are. And not only to know our thoughts, feeling, and experience, but actually to be fully participative in our thoughts, emotions, and experience in a wholehearted manner, in an alive manner. The last way in which we don't have generosity to ourselves is because most of us are defended, overly defended, perhaps would be the way to put it. And what does defense have to do with? Defense is a psychological term, but it really speaks to the way we all learn to protect ourselves. Almost everyone in our culture has learned ways of not, these are all charged but also very meaningful words, not to feel authentically. Somewhere along the lines, we learned, Jane, don't dance on that table. Just don't dance on that table. You're just too damn happy. And what does little Jane learn? Well, mommy and daddy like me to be pretty somber. Or, why is the sky blue? Whack, don't ask stupid questions. There goes your curiosity. Or could be a million and one things. You look too sexy in that outfit. From there on in, you wear black and very baggy clothing. There are numerous ways. Don't talk back. Don't even think for yourself. We've all learned ways of shutting ourselves down, holding ourselves back, restricting ourselves, restraining ourselves. Sometimes we are aware of that, and sometimes we are not. Sometimes we're not even aware of how restricted we can be. And sometimes we just actually know, we can sort of see, especially if we compare ourselves to others, that we are don't feel fully alive, don't feel fully expressive. And it's, again, generosity to self is being able to be with whatever we're thinking, whatever we're feeling, whatever we're experiencing. I'm not advocating here just free form acting out of behavior, but we are advocating actually knowing whatever is coming up in our experience, our thoughts, our feelings, our experience. I might want to dance on the table. I know I've got that impulse to dance on the table. Doesn't necessarily mean I get up on the table. But a lot of us at this point in our lives, if I were to ask you, do you ever feel like dancing on the table? You'd say, are you kidding? That was beat out of me long time ago. Do you ever feel like doing something spontaneous, like just going ice skating in the Galleria? Don't be stupid, Harvey. I learned how not to do those kinds of things at a very, very young age. So we are defended. So where does practice of meditation fit into all of this? All of the attentional practices that we do, whether it be mindfulness or whether it be slow, gradual relaxation of the body, even if it's mindfulness of doing something like an advanced tantric practice where we're actually focusing our mind, the ability to calm and be present is absolutely fundamental to generosity towards, emotional generosity towards self. Because if you're able to be present and you're able to be calm, naturally is the case that your experience will start unfolding for you. What you're thinking becomes very, very evident. Anybody who's done any meditation, you notice what you're thinking. As you're calming down, you'll notice that sometimes your feelings become a lot clearer, a lot more vibrant, a lot more alive. What you really is going on in your experience is capable of seeing a lot more clearly through any of the attentional practices we do. If we're learning how to focus on the breath, if we're paying attention to what's going on in our fields of experience, our seeing, our hearing, sound, sight, touch. There are so many ways of cultivating attention. And people get confused that, oh, I do it this way, and I do it that way, and I do this attentional practice. It doesn't matter. Any attentional practice, any mindfulness practice, will be conducive to helping you be generous to yourself in knowing your thoughts, knowing your feelings, knowing your experience. What's generosity to others? It's kind of simple. If you know your thoughts, your feelings, your experience, to the extent comfortable, you share that with others. Sharing our thoughts, feelings, and experiences is generosity to others. People come into my office all the time. I'm a psychotherapist. Things are kind of chilled in a relationship. Do you ever share your personal thoughts, your feelings about your life, your experience, how you feel about the day that you're loving, that it's a blue sky day? No, we just do problem solving. Well, that again is that to-do thing that we've got so dominant in our culture. You can get some sense of contact with another person by sharing your to-do lists. I need to go to Kroger's today, and then I need to go to the Galleria, and then I need to tend to the kids, and then I've got to paint the roof, and then I've got to sweep the floor. And your partner, friend, does the same with you. Okay, you feel some level of, we've shared something, but really, you don't feel like you're hearing much. You don't feel like there's something alive there. And a lot of us, like it or not, can devolve into relationships where, what do roommates often have to talk about? Are you going to do the shopping? Are you going to do the cleaning? Are you doing your share of the dishes? And of course, you get into debates about how many of the dishes you're doing. The to-do becomes part of the big conversation. But it's not necessarily easy or common for people to share their experience, their feelings, their thoughts in a deep manner. The simple fortune cookie on this is, intimacy arises out of shared vulnerability. So the more you know your experience, the more you know your thoughts, the more you know your feelings, and to the extent comfortable, and that's an important rider, if you share those, it's generative of intimacy and connection. You know, the psychological language is intimacy. The Buddhist language of connection is love and compassion. But if you want to be alive with love and compassion, certainly in our culture, the way one is alive with love and compassion is in accepting other people's experience, their feelings, their thoughts, and knowing how to share your own thoughts, feelings, and experiences. And again, what allows that to occur is your own knowledge of these things, and your own knowledge of these things occur through an ability to be with our thoughts, our feelings, and our experiences. And that's generated with any of the calming attentional practices we do. Allows us to develop greater emotional generosity with ourselves and greater emotional generosity with others. So what's spiritual generosity? it's a little bit different. So everything I've said now, up to now, really can be supported by certainly appropriate behavior, which is all under the rubric of correct behavior in Buddhist practice. But just appropriate behavior is certainly conducive to our own generating attention. And with attention, we can develop some knowledge of our own thoughts, feelings, and experience. And that is a form of self-generosity and allows us, to the extent comfortable, to share this with others as a generosity with others. All based on appropriate behavior, stabilizing behavior, any attentional practice we can do. What's spiritual generosity? It's allowing our thoughts, feelings, and experience without getting lost in those thoughts, feelings, and experience, without identifying with those thoughts, feelings, and experiences, without getting fused to the point of being lost with those thoughts, feelings, and experience. And in fact, I guess the word confused is a great way to talk about this, because the word in Buddhism that's associated with this would be moha, delusion, but you could also use confusion. And confusion really talks about getting merged into something. And confusion with our thoughts, feelings, and experiences is being lost in them to the point that you're not aware, that you're just kind of like just a monkey scampering about. There's no kind of reflective capacity, no sense of presence, no sense of real aliveness. There might be a lot of activity, but you don't feel alive. You're lost in a train of thought to the point, you know, you don't have any idea what's going on about you. You're lost in your feelings to the point that you don't know what's happening. You're just overwhelmed with anger or lust or desire, or, you know, I've just got to get that ice cream cake. I've just got to get it. I've got to get it. But this is a very, very subtle place and a very, very subtle subject of practice. Because some people can hear, don't be identified with your thoughts, feelings, and experience. And they hear that or they read about it. And this is the biggest danger when people read about Buddhism in book. And they feel that what that is referring to then is a kind of pushing away of experience, pushing away thoughts, pushing away feeling. I shouldn't have any thoughts. I shouldn't have any feelings. I shouldn't have any experiences. You read about disidentification and all of a sudden you think that Spock in the old Star Wars is your ego ideal, because he doesn't seem to be identified with certainly his feelings. He has none. He's pushed them all away. Now, it's interesting. There are points in practice and in spiritual development. If one is truly overwhelmed, dysregulated, we say in my trade, truly overwhelmed, you might need to learn how to gently push things, gently tamp things, gently learn how to relax. There is a skill of learning how to work with your emotions that might involve a certain amount of gently pushing aside. But that's not the most profound issue. And that's not the ultimate, really, spiritual space we would like people to end up in. The spiritual challenge is, can we have our thoughts, our feelings, our experience fully and not be stuck? Not be stuck on any thought, feeling, or experience. If you have had the pleasure of seeing spiritual teachers, highly developed spiritual teachers, many, many of them are extremely vibrant. They're not shut down. They're not Spock and Space Trek, whatever it's, what is it? Star Trek, thank you. I knew you'd know. They're not stuck, they're not rigid. They're not, I don't allow my thoughts to get a hold, you know, of me, or, you know, I don't have too many emotions and I don't want to experience too many things, stay away from me. No, they're vibrant, they're letting thoughts occur. feelings occur, experience. You know, initially when we start hearing about spirituality, some of us even think we should stop thinking. I was there for several years. Unfortunately, I was in graduate school at the time. It wasn't a pretty moment when I failed my prelims and I told my major advisor I was spending all my time trying to not think. Shocking. That's a kind of misdirection. So the ability to have thoughts, have feelings, have experiences, but not to be fused with them, not to be stuck on them. It's actually a very, very big training. It's all under the rubric of the Buddhist teachings on wisdom. Delightful, wonderful, spacious wisdom. And so spiritual generosity is the ability to actually be fully alive, but in a kind of spaciousness that, again, if we have the pleasure of being with spiritual teachers, most people say they're just so spacious and just so lively and just things come and go and so much movement and ease. And it's almost like witnessing a person who's embodying ballet, even if they're not necessarily moving anything. So that's spiritual generosity. I don't know if you have something to add, dear.
One of the beautiful things about Harvey's talk and really about the teaching itself is the way in which our growth and cultivation in different areas totally support each other. So what Harvey is describing really is the choreography, the ballet, if you will, the cultivation of attention just naturally can lead to a relaxation, a lessening of defensiveness, and thus just naturally to more sense of connection with others. Intimacy with ourselves means we have some chance of being intimate and close with others. And that in doing this, we in this closeness with others, as that develops, compassion develops, love develops, we also begin to recognize just implicitly and then explicitly that, I'm not actually the center of the universe. You know, there's somebody else out here. And so this tight holding on to me that all of us experience, but is actually hard to recognize precisely what that is because it's so all-encompassing. All of our experience is about me. But then when we connect with others, it's a way of, it's a little bit freedom from that, you know, a little bit, oh, no, it's not, I don't have to hang on so tight. Here, I can just hang with you and, you know, we can float in the ocean of spaciousness together. And that's what there is. There's an ocean of spaciousness. And so there's the coming, the dawning of wisdom, just like that. And as Harvey said, that's why we want to experience the mutuality, the mutual strengthening of all of these aspects of our cultivation. Because they are generous with each other. Compassion is generous to behavior. Behavior is generous to wisdom and to attention. And just to seal that, Longchen Rabchan, one of the greatest figures of the Tibetan tradition, he said this. The three trainings in Buddhism, my teacher Geshe Wangyal named his monastery in New Jersey the place of the three trainings, Lobsum, Sherab Ling, So these are the trainings that Harvey has also been talking about in attention, in ethics, we can say. But
behavior,
I think,
behavior. Huh? I said behavior.
Behavior, yeah. Ethics or behavior is really nothing more. It's fundamentally generosity. The generosity that you don't harm others, the generosity that you help when you can. That's what good behavior, that's what ethics is. And wisdom, these are the three trainings. So the great authority on the ultimate teaching of the great completeness, Dzogchen Longchenpa, said very simple things. He says, the three trainings, which you've just heard about, when utterly pure, are like the wish-fulfilling gem. A wish-fulfilling gem is a very prominent metaphor in Indian and Tibet It's, you know, it's that jewel you read about in fairy tales. Whatever you wish, you can have. It's the genie out of the bottle. There's so many stories about all of humanity longs for a wish-fulfilling gem. So that's what these three trainings are. They are that. They are the path, which here and hereafter offers bliss. That sense of fun and spaciousness that Harvey was talking about, that sense of just being able to easily inhabit your own body, is bliss. And ultimately, it leads to what is good and pure. Through them, you find real peace. Real peace. Just let your imagination open to what that might be like. Real peace. Do you feel real peace the first thing when you get up in the morning? Do you feel real peace when you get in your car and you drive to work? But we long for it. Real peace. And you experience the mind of enlightenment, enlightenment mind, bodhicitta, in your very being. Let them develop straight away, he said. May it be so.
If you enjoyed this teaching, please visit our website, donmountain.org, to subscribe to this course and find other great Dharma offerings. May all beings always have happiness and its causes. May all beings always be free of pain and its causes.